Thank you for that introduction, and good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for staying for today's final talk. And I would like to start today by presenting to you some of my dissertation research from North Carolina State University, where I'm studying the environmental impact and biological fate of the new synthetic auxin, aminocycle pyrichlor. So with that, we'll get started, and today's talk, again, is entitled Release of Synthetic Auxin Residues from Turfgrass Clippings. I'd like to begin today's presentation by giving you a brief outline. We'll start with an introduction where I'll introduce different methods in golf course management and home lawn care that can result in treated turfgrass clippings accumulating in sensitive aquatic or riparian plant communities. From there, we'll also discuss some of the different synthetic auxin herbicides utilized for broadleaf weed control in home lawns and golf course settings, and discuss why some of their accumulation in these sensitive plant communities could be detrimental to wildlife and other species. From there, we'll move on to the materials and methods for this trial, followed by results and discussions, conclusions, and with time remaining, we'll discuss future research, and I'll entertain any questions that may arise. So recent movement in the golf course industry has been a drive towards sustainability. One of the big inputs in this is establishing native or natural areas on a golf course to provide not only aesthetics pleasing, but also minimize inputs as far as fertility practices, frequent mowings, and herbicide applications. These not only provide new aesthetics and levels of playability, but they also increase the golf course's biodiversity by creating numerous habitats for which wildlife and plant species can thrive. Outside of the natural areas, it's important to maintain good weed control in your levels or areas of grasses that receive heavy play, such as your fairways, where typical synthetic auxin applications will be made to control these weeds. The native or natural areas are often protected from these to continue to increase that plant biodiversity. However, after synthetic auxins are applied to fairways, it's an important golf course management practice to maintain regular mowing routines. However, there are situations that arise on golf courses when that regular mowing routine cannot be followed, such as heavy or prolonged rain events. That can lead to the accumulation of large amounts of turfgrass clippings. Turfgrass clippings are not desired on a golf course because they are unsightly and they can interfere with playability, specifically with ball roll. Therefore, turfgrass managers will often use wind dispersal techniques such as using a large blower to move these from the play areas and into some of the native or natural areas. As we mentioned earlier, if this fairway grass had been treated with a synthetic auxin herbicide, you can have accumulation of these in some sensitive aquatic or riparian communities and therefore potential for the release of those compounds on these plant species. Now, in home lawn management, we often don't think of native or natural areas. I guess that's unless you have a neighbor who only mows his lawn once a month. But in most situations, there are typical circumstances that can take place where if your lawn was treated with a synthetic auxin herbicide, those clippings could be moved into some riparian or aquatic plant communities. One of the best turfgrass management practices that we stress to home lawn owners and lawn care operators is returning the clippings to the lawn of which they were taken from. Most don't realize that this is a great source of nitrogen, often providing 25% of the annual nitrogen needed to maintain a healthy turfgrass stand. However, there are always those situations that arise where home lawn owners or turfgrass managers cannot keep up with the frequent mowing routines, and therefore it makes an accumulation of a large amount of turfgrass clippings that need to be disposed of. For example, if this lawn was treated with a synthetic auxin herbicide, it would be going against labeled recommendations for some of the products to actually send these clippings to a composting site or use them for composting yourself because of the residues remaining in those. So sometimes if there's allowed by city ordinances, you can actually send this to landfill. So home lawn owners will often deposit their clippings on the curbside, but again, there are always situations where if a large rain event occurs, these clippings could be washed down to the nearest storm drain, then moving downstream into some of these sensitive aquatic or riparian plant communities. So now that we've discussed some of the different outlets for turfgrass clippings to move into these communities, let's spend a few moments discussing some of the synthetic auxin herbicides that have been used in golf course or home lawn management in the past or are currently still being used. Synthetic auxin herbicides have been synthesized since the early 1900s and are among some of the most widely used chemical agents for broadleaf weed control in various turfgrass systems. Synthetic auxins mimic a plant's response to indole-3 acetic acid, which is a natural plant hormone, except the synthetic auxin herbicides are not rapidly metabolized and they cause an over-exaggerated effect, often seeing epinastic curvature, unregulated plant growth, and plant death typically occurs 1 to 2 weeks after the application. The herbicides I have listed here are clopyrrolid and triclopyr, which make up the two active ingredients in Dow's Confront. And at the bottom, we have aminocyclopyrrolid, which is the active ingredient in DuPont's Imprelis. All three of these synthetic auxin herbicides are very active at low application rates, and depending on the system in which they're applied, they can have a relatively long persistence. Past research has indicated off-target plant injury resulting from turfgrass clippings previously being treated with synthetic auxin herbicides. The photos here show tomato plants suffering from characteristic synthetic auxin injury that were composted with synthetic auxin-treated clippings, the ones mentioned on the previous slide. So this is not new information. It's been known for quite a while, and often when new synthetic auxin herbicides are released, this is something that they do screen for. However, little thought has been given to the off-target movement of these clippings into some of these aquatic or riparian zones, which brings us to our research objective, which was to determine the effect of synthetic auxin-treated turfgrass clippings on aquatic or riparian plant species. So now moving on to the materials and methods for this study. Research was conducted at the Weed Science Annex Glasshouses in Raleigh, North Carolina. We had two indicator species, the first being alligator weed at the top, and the second being parrot feather at the bottom. Our herbicide treatments included Imprelis, which is the active ingredient aminocyclopyrrolid, applied at 84 grams acid equivalent per hectare. We also used Confront, which was a combination of triclopyr and clopyrrolid, at 315 and 105 grams acid equivalent per hectare. We also included a non-treated mulch in which we took tall fescue clippings that had not had a herbicide applied to them and used those in the study, and also your traditional non-treated check. These herbicide treatments were applied and then harvested at different timings. So they were applied at either 14, 7, 3, 1, or 0 days after applications. So the herbicides were applied, and depending on those harvest dates, that's when we took mulching collections from those sites. We then used 15-liter growth containers that contained both parrot feather and alligator weed grown in 9.5 liters of pond water. We then took 25 grams fresh weight of tall fescue clippings that were previously treated with those herbicides at those respective dates and applied that into the growth containers to see how those clippings would affect the growth of these aquatic riparian plant species. Our treatment design was a 4x5 factorial and a randomized complete block with 4 replications and 2 experimental runs. And finally, our data was subject to analysis of variance using mixed model methodology and mean separated using Fisher's protected LSD at the P less than 0.05 level. Now taking us to our results and discussions, we'll begin with our ANOVA for alligator weed 69 days after experimental initiation. So this was actually at our harvesting date. I'd like to take your attention, and for brevity today, we'll just discuss the interactive turn of the two main effects, being the herbicide treatment by the days after application timing. So please allow me a moment to set up this graph, as the rest will follow the same format. This is alligator weed injury 69 days after initiation. On our y-axis, we have percent visual injury from 0 to 100% scale. On our x-axis, we have our individual herbicide applications made at their respective dates, either 14, 7, 3, 1, or 0 days after application. The orange bars denote the aminocyclopyrrolid herbicide, and the green bars denote the triclopyr plus clopyrrolid herbicide. Taking your attention to this slide, we can quickly see at the 14, 7, and 3 days after application, we have statistically greater alligator weed injury from the aminocyclopyrrolid herbicide than the respective triclopyr plus clopyrrolid at the same dates. Our injury evens out at the 1 and 0 days after application, but it should also be noted that we have significantly greater injury from all herbicide applications and all timings compared to the non-treated. This graph represents our alligator weed shoot length, which was measured on a 0 to 60 centimeter scale. Again, we can see the same trend following that we saw for our injury, with greater shoot reduction in alligator weed from our aminocyclopyrrolid treatments made 14, 7, and 3 days after application. While these might not be statistically separate from each other, the data still shows this trend for greater shoot reduction. And again, it should be noted that at 0 and 1 days after application, we typically have a level playing field, except we have our greatest injury resulted from our triclopyr plus clopyrrolid at the 0 days after application. Some visual illustrations of the typical auxin injury we saw on alligator weed. Typically what we saw was epinastic curvature at the apical meristem of these plants, which was followed by chlorosis and necrosis, and then ending all further plant growth after that point. So now for our parrot feather ANOVA 69 days after experimental initiation, again we saw the same significant interactive effect of herbicide by days after application. This is parrot feather injury, again, visually rated on a 0 to 100% scale. Here we're seeing the same trends that we saw with alligator weed, with greater injury from the aminocyclopyrachlor treatments at 14, 7, and 3 days after application compared to the triclopyr plus clopyrrolid. This is giving somewhat of an indication that this compound could be more persistent than triclopyr and clopyrrolid. Again, our injury evens out at 1 and 0 days after application, but typically showing a trend for greater injury following an aminocyclopyrachlor app. This again is parrot feather shoot length, again measured in centimeters, and following the same trend as what we saw with injury, with greater shoot length reduction following clippings that were applied with aminocyclopyrachlor at 14, 7, and 3 days after application. Again, parrot feather did not show great sensitivity to triclopyr and clopyrrolid applications that were made 14 and 7 days before mulching took place, so showing a greater sensitivity overall to the aminocyclopyrachlor. And again, a visual estimate of the injury. Again, the herbicide translocated to the apical meristems of these plants, following with epinastic curvature, necrosis, and plant death. So an interesting thing that we saw for all these is for all three of the synthetic auxin herbicides, it always hemmed at the active growing points. And when that point would die, the plant would try to shoot out adventitious shoots. And then what would happen was that herbicide would relocate back to those shoots. So it would just continue the cycle of plant injury. So to draw conclusions, aminocyclopyrachlor and triclopyr plus clopyrrolid residues in treated tall fescue clippings did cause significant injury and shoot reduction to aquatic and riparian plant species, particularly noting it being alligator weed and parrot feather. Overall, aminocyclopyrachlor had greater injury and shoot reduction at greater days after application timings, which does give an indication that this compound could be more persistent in turf grass clippings than triclopyr plus clopyrrolid. It is important for this data to be in the hands of turf grass managers because they are the ones actively returning these clippings. We know that you cannot apply this stuff as composting to sensitive vegetables and other crops, but oftentimes it's overlooked at the downstream effect that we have on different ecosystems and environments. So I hope that this information will be able to be utilized by turf grass managers who are applying or have applied these materials in the past and then make educated decisions on how to properly return those in a manner in which doesn't cause downstream effect. So with that, I would like to thank you for your attention. And if we have time remaining, I'd love to discuss a few questions. Yes, sir.
From what I understand, Wuhan has taken the Prevus out of the market. Mm-hmm. Was this one of the reasons? I know it has some negative impact on some trees. Mm-hmm. I'm just wondering if this research was funded by them or
Yes, great comment. The question and comment was any of this data instrumental in Imprelis being taken off the market? For those of you who don't know, Imprelis was released in fall of 2011. They've since had some off-target injury to some conifer trees, mostly located in the northeast to midwest on some Norway spruce and Theodore cedars, such like that. This portion of research was funded by DuPont. They're helping with my assistantship, so this was presented to them. But as far as it being taken off the market, I think the injury from the trees itself was the biggest factor in that and the surprise that they had from it, unfortunately. So, but no, thank you for your question.
You.
Yes, sir.
How did you pick alligator weed and parrot feather? Because those seem like weeds we would want to spray herbicide on.
Very good question there. Why was alligator weed and parrot feather chosen in this study? One of my co-advisors is Rob Richardson, who specializes in aquatic weed management at North Carolina State. So we had talked about doing some different native or natural aquatic species that are found in North Carolina, but we decided to use more of the aquatic weeds because they typically show a larger tolerance to different auxin herbicides when applied. So our thoughts were if we can show injury and growth reduction to these species, it would more likely translate to more sensitive native or natural plants. So that's why those were chosen. Yes, sir.
Dustin, did you cross-reference, Franklin Bear told is an aquatic herbicide. Mm-hmm. Is it, and I'm not fully familiar with that label because it's sold by Seapro.
Mm-hmm.
Did you cross-reference that to see if Franklin Bear would have had activity on those weeds specifically, and it's a legal use?
Mm-hmm. Yes. The triclopyr is labeled for aquatic usage sold by Seapro. I believe that it does have alligator weed and parrot feather included in that labeling. But our hypothesis was going into this experiment that the environmental fate of triclopyr and minocyclopyrchlor is broken down very rapidly through phytolysis in shallow aqueous environments. That's why triclopyr is labeled in aquatics, because it breaks down relatively fast. So our thoughts were initially that if we applied clippings that had been treated with these synthetic auxins, we more than likely would not see anything unless it was potentially from the clopyrrolid within the confront. But that was actually, our hypothesis was blown on that one, where we saw increased injury from the minocyclopyrchlor. So, yes, ma'am.
Did you test the water to see what the concentration was being released from the clippings?
Very good question.
The
question was, did we check the analysis of the herbicide residues remaining in the water? No, we did not. At North Carolina State, we did not have the analytical equipment to do that. It is something that we have talked about quite a bit and would like to go back and visit that in future research. Any further questions? Thank you for your attention.